not closest representing the council on things, so we'll be okay.
All that they want, yeah.
Matt, is insurance fire retained?
It is not. We've left a couple back at the office. There's one of my investigators is back, and actually two investigators are still back at the office. They have interviews this morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. We just acted 10, so probably should have to. So we will get started. My name is Juanita Dixon. Affectionately known to probably everybody as JJ. Been that forever. I'm the chair of the Ethics Commission and so happy to be here this morning. If you would please stand and pledge the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And some of the things that we've accomplished and some of the things we're trying to achieve going forward. The investigations that we've conducted so far have been fairly impactful on the city. Some of the highlights I think that we should talk about potentially or cases you're very familiar with, whether it be the supervisor elections or the housing authority or the... I have a whole list of the reports that have been generated by our office, and it's pretty extensive. I think we've issued about 12 subpoenas in the last 6 months, so... That's a huge uptake from what we've done in the past. Our investigations are focused on trying to look at the some of the bigger issues within the city and some of the impactful where the dollars are going. So we're looking at grants, looking at contracts. And I have to say the vast majority of our findings in our investigations lean more towards misfeasance as opposed to malfeasance. So it's a question of we have procedures and policies in place in the city, and when those are circumvented, they result in, you know, bad things happening. A great example would be the most recent investigation, the supervisor elections. There are procedures and policies in place that affect the procurement card and the use thereof. And in this particular case, those procedures and policies weren't followed and resulted in about $138,000 of purchases that went unaccounted for about 3 years. And again, it's not a question of malfeasance, it's a question of not following the procedures. And we look at the contracts and the grants, it's usually the same outcome. When we look at a grant or a contract where the deliverables are not met, it's because the oversight piece is not enough. So the recommendations that we make for the city involve process improvement. They involve potentially changes to the legislation. But we assisted in the procurement code changes, and I think the and we insisted on from the Inspector General's perspective, is the oversight piece. It's a common theme for all the things we're looking at, is increased oversight. And to that end, it's going to be part of my, later when I speak about our ambitions or what we're looking for in the out years, that's going to be part of that. From an IT perspective, the IT support from the city has been fantastic. We procured, with the help of the city, data analytics, and from that we've generated a lot of cases. What we're able to do, which we haven't been able to do in the past, is take a large amount of data and, from an analytical perspective, scrub the data to look for anomalies, whether it be fraud or waste or abuse. And from that we've generated significant cases. One we're looking at now is PPP loans. We're looking at the PPP loans that were generated and city employees who received those loans to make sure that those city employees are all following rules and procedures as it relates to PPP. So that'll be something that we see coming forward. We're also looking at potential overtime issues. We're able to look at large sets of data to look at the cities, look for anomalies within overtime usage, and that's generated a couple of reports as well. So we procured software that allows us to do that, and right now we're in the process of procuring additional software. Our current case management system is a system called IGMS that we beg, borrowed, and steal from Palm Beach County, and we pay them an annual fee to use their system. It's antiquated, it's not sufficient for our needs, so we're in the process now of procuring new data management software. The city, again, the IT department has been very helpful in helping us get down that road. The system we're looking at potentially will allow us to be forward leaning in our, the way we manage our cases. So look for that to come online soon. A couple of things from the audit side of the house. We've recently helped parking David compliance audit that we did for them. It's an annual requirement that they need, and we helped them out with that. We're in the process of doing the Sunshine audit, which, Dr. Stelma, as you know, is an annual requirement for us to look at the city council to make sure all meetings are noticed appropriately. So we'll start that one here shortly. And then we just completed a CDP audit, which is the career development program. So we looked at this career development program for the city to see, to make sure that those the funds that went to that were appropriately spent and reimbursed as appropriate. And we just completed that audit as well. So the office itself, we're fully manned, or I should say fully staffed. And I think you're seeing the effects of that staffing now. I have to say that the last 6 months has been drama-free. I bring to you, hopefully, today, unless you guys surprise me with something, we've been drama-free. And I think the results of that lack of drama has lent us to have the ability to actually focus on what we're there to do. So I thank you for that, because this committee has had a big portion in getting us to the point where we're at now, whether it's your backing financially, whether it's your backing just from the support perspective, but we're in a position now where we're actually doing some really solid investigative work for the city. We have several cases that are at the federal level. We have several cases at the state level. As you know, we're an administrative body. However, when we work an investigation and it gets to the point where there's a federal crime or a state crime, we have those connections with the state attorney and the U.S. attorney to be able to foster those cases forward. And we have several cases now that are at the federal level. They involve rental assistance programs, some COVID leftover money, some pass-through money from COVID, and we're pursuing those federally and some state as well. We've had some recent convictions at the state level for some of our cases, which is a first for the office. So you'll see a trend here of us getting involved and the outreach for our office. We have fantastic working relationships with the independent agencies, with the administration, with the city council. So that's a very refreshing change, I think, from in the past. I open up to any questions you may have in terms of anything you'd like to talk about. But for the most part, with the exception of my ambitions for potentially, I know this is going to be a very, very tight budget year. So my ask for a new person to do contract oversight and grant oversight may be a bit too much of a reach, but we're going to ask anyway. So short of that, I mean, I'm more than welcome to answer any questions you may have. You've got a booming voice. We can hear you.
Well, I just want everyone to be able to hear. I hope this is being recorded as well.
Yes, sir.
It is being recorded.
Yes, sir.
Is this working?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Mr. LaSalle, are you able to provide us the investigations that are ongoing, or is that confidential?
So it's a great question. Through the chair, it's a great question. And I run a fine line in terms of the information that I brief to the administration and to the city council. When I come across information or we're conducting an investigation where I think it has, by statute, if there's something that involves imminent harm, threat of violence, those types of things, I have to immediately inform the city council and the administration. But what I run into is there's lots of situations where we have cases that we're working that have or potentially could have an impact on the city reputationally. So in other words, hypothetically, if we're working an investigation against a nonprofit, the last thing I want to happen from a city perspective is the mayor or yourself to stand up and tout a nonprofit, and then the next day I publish a report saying that that nonprofit is not good. So that's the line I run. So what I try to do is weigh in my head what the benefit would be for the city and the embarrassment. I don't want the city to be embarrassed. I don't want the city to be caught off guard. But yet I also have responsibility to keep an investigative, the integrity of the investigation until it's released. So I have that. I think based on my read of the statutes and my read of the charter, I have the autonomy to make those decisions. And sometimes I don't. I mean, I pick the wrong ones to, you know, the battle or the hill to fall on. But I try to do that. And
so that's when you come to me with. This is, now, I came to you when I first became president and said, I don't want to be surprised.
That's correct.
Keep me informed of
anything
on my side of the fourth floor.
Yes, sir.
And you have done that.
Yes, sir.
So that's the discretion you're talking about.
That is correct. And to be clear, when I come and talk to you, I also go to the other side of the fourth floor. So there's no information that's being parsed out separately. It's all, when I talk to everybody who needs to know. And, you know, like I said, it's a fine line for me because I have the investigative side of the house. You know, I have a director of investigations who constantly is like, hey, man, this is an investigation. Let's not, which I get, right? Being a formal federal agent, I understand the importance and the sanctity of an investigation. But we also have responsibility, you know, as an administrative body to keep the city and the city council informed of our investigations. So I tend to be a little bit probably too sharing with the information. But they're administrative cases until they're not, right? And once they become criminal, then it's a different animal altogether. Then the state's attorney's rules and the U.S. attorney's rules kick in terms of what we can share. But for the most part, when it's an administrative investigation, they're usually in the past, meaning the events already occurred, and we're looking at things historically. The data exists, the records exist, so there's really no harm or foul in me telling you what's going on because it's already happened.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Anyone else? I have a question concerning your, I know it's not an official request yet, but for an additional staff member, what would be the cost of that?
I don't know the exact, I know the base salary would probably be in the range of $50,000 a year for the base salary, and then whatever the administrative costs are for that employee, I'm sure it's probably about the same, probably another $50,000 on top of that for insurance and everything else, if that's worth it. So I think right now, our budget has been static for as long as I've been on board in terms of, we haven't asked for, other than a car. I think we got a car 2 years ago. But other than that, the software requests, we haven't asked for anything additionally other than, I shouldn't say that. That's not true. Look back up. You guys have been very generous in terms of our office has recently been retrofitted, so that's appreciated. But from a manning perspective, this would be the first staffing increase that we've asked for. And it goes along with what the city's currently engaging in with the transparency the mayor is trying to push with the oversight piece. And we have found pervasively throughout all investigations that is where the city is sorely lacking, is an oversight of contracts and grants and programs.
Mr. Lassa, I have a question for you.
Yes,
and a comment. So
yes,
I've had the opportunity to work with you on a couple of cases, and really do appreciate the professionalism and the expertise, the way that you built out your team. I've been great to work with. Are you able to quantify, like, the savings to the city on some of these investigations?
Through the chair, to Ms. Yes and no. I can quantify it when we have a case, for example, like the supervisor elections, where I can quantify that $138,000. When we had the issue with JHA and the debit cards, I can quantify that. But there's a value that cannot be quantified, and I use the analogy of a policeman on a street corner. So with our outreach efforts, with our investigative efforts, when we see, when someone sees an article in the paper or sees a thing on it, I can't quantify or put a dollar amount on the preventative aspect of what we're trying to do. But yes, we can capture the monies on the Mr. Nins, who's with us today, had a case recently that's at the federal level where it involved over $300,000 in fraud. I can quantify that. Over the course of the last year, we're well over $2 million in terms of monies that we can identify as either being misappropriated or misspent. And again, waste is a kind of a tricky, you know, what's waste? So if I have an employee who's working excessive overtime, is that waste? Is that fraud? Is that abuse? It's all three. But to quantify that, it's difficult. I can give you a dollar amount, but it doesn't capture the totality of what our preventative efforts are. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Does that conclude your
report? Yes, ma'am.
Do you have more?
It does.
Okay, thank you so much. And I know that we are, we don't want to be here all day, but this is my first introduction to, I've met you before, but you and your team. If you don't mind, can you just introduce your team?
Absolutely. You want to just start? Bryce, tell us who you are and what you do.
Bryce Ayers, I'm an investigative support analyst, so I actually handle the data analytics piece for supporting investigations and audit.
Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Turner. I'm an investigator.
Robert Linsner, I'm an investigator.
Good morning, everyone. My name is David Johnston. My title is a mouthful, but it's Deputy Inspector General for Audit. So I, in addition to supporting Mr. LaSalle, I oversee our audit department and our data analytics.
I'm Maria Pompilia, I'm an auditor.
Garon, I'm an investigator.
I'm Rick Samples, I'm the Deputy Inspector General for Investigations.
Kalia Watts, I'm the Executive Assistant to Mr. LaSalle.
Hi, good morning. Christina Gatto. My title is also a mouthful. I'm a senior program coordinator as well as accreditation manager, so I ensure that the office remains in compliance, and I also do a lot of support work for investigators, for the DIGS, and Ms. LaSalle.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for what you do for our city. All right, we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the Inspector General's performance evaluation, and I think we all have a copy of that in our books. I'm not really sure how it's been done in the past.
If I may, Ms. Brown. So the reason why this is on the agenda today is because the way the code is written, I'm supposed to have an evaluation every March. But last year, there was a delay in my evaluation because we were in the middle of an accreditation cycle. So we get accredited by the CFA every 3 years. And the previous chair wanted to wait until we had the results of that accreditation before looking at my evaluation. So by doing that, they push the cycle back 6 months. So if it's amenable to the committee, what I'd recommend is that we just push this back for another year. So instead of doing it now, we'll do it again in March, because we just did it in October. And so I don't think it's probably necessary to do it now, and we'll wait an entire year to do it again if that's amenable to the board. If not, I'd open any suggestions.
I'll have to defer to the board here.
I would just hate to get to violate the code if it says you're supposed to be evaluated every March, even though it would be a kind of a 6 month evaluation.
Right.
Sounds like.
Let me check with my expert here.
April.
It's April.
It's done every April.
And the reason why it wasn't done April of last year was because of the accreditation thing.
I understand. I would prefer to get it back into a regular cycle when it's supposed to be done. I don't know how Ms. Foling feels.
No, I'm just wondering if you think that anything has changed from the October evaluation, and if we couldn't use that just to review that, see has anything changed, just to kind of expedite it.
I can do that, and maybe we could. Not have another meeting, just me forward the update to you all individually so we don't have to reconvene, and then you can just use that for consideration.
If my memory serves me, it was fairly glowing.
Yes, ma'am. It was, I had no issues with it whatsoever.
And there was a financial component given, as I recall. Yes.
There is. There is.
There was one done in October.
Correct.
Okay.
It should have been done in April, but because of the request of the last chair, it was pushed to October, and now that knocked it off kilter. So we can put it back on kilter.
Go ahead. I think it might be a good idea for us to kind of catch up and maybe do this in June, and then next year we'll be back on track in April.
That's fine.
The other thing that I remember, having gone through this system, we had some additional information that was provided to us, and I don't know whether the city's personnel department did it, but they did some work and provided us with some information from which we could base our determinations.
Yes, sir.
I don't see those folks here today. They're usually here. But it would be good to have that information ahead of time so we could work through it rather than us just kind of guesstimating.
Yes, sir.
Score.
Yes, sir.
I can get that provided.
I mean, Chuck, I'm not sure exactly what the source was, but they gave us some guidance on each of the different things we were supposed to gauge.
So, Christina, did I get that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. Question is, so it's not due in April of this year, 2024.
It would be, but because of last year, everything being deferred. I mean, it's up to you if you all agree to defer it again.
We can certainly do it in April, and then as Dr. Stelmer, you know, suggested, getting back on track. I mean, I can do an update between what has occurred since the last in April, and then put it back on track for an annual.
That would be my thought.
I think that's a good idea.
You could put it to a vote.
Yeah, for the sake of like June, and then next year we would do it in April.
Whatever the committee decides.
Right, because I think we need to provide, whoever provided the information to us, time to prepare, get it to us. And I like to have it sent by email so I can review it before the evaluation rather than just reading.
Yes, sir.
I mean, I'd support that.
Well, I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay, so then the motion has been made by Mr. Copeland, second by President Salem, to defer it to June of 2024, is that correct? And then get back on track in April of 2025. Are there any questions on that motion? If not, all in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
So we'll revisit this in June of this year, and if Christina, I'm assuming that you will reach out to those individuals that need to provide us with the information necessary.
No problem.
And get that to us via email.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, is there any other business?
Mr. Gonsell, you mentioned grants and contract compliance. I have heard just historically, and I'd be curious to Ms. Bowling's comments, that we as a city, and this is not a reflection of Deegan or Curry or anybody, we have just not done a good job of supervising grants and contracts in the city itself. And this goes back many years. I've talked to CAOs 10 years ago, just never done, have put the effort into it. And so my question is, do we need more support within the city itself versus, or maybe both, within the city itself and your office? Or I think that's the discussion we probably need to have.
Through the chair to Dr. Salem, I agree with you. But what we have found is the contract language and grant language is specific in terms of who the oversight responsibility falls to. Unfortunately, it's whether a question of those folks, it's a collateral duty for them, meaning that's not their primary position, and it becomes kind of like a low priority, or they don't have the capability, technical capability, to actually do the job. And it may be a question of training, it may be a question of, I don't know, but from what we've seen, the contract language and the grant language does specify, like a grants manager or a contract manager, it's just the function is not being done. The Grants and Compliance Office has a very effective check sheet, if you will, where they're looking at, when they do an office visit, they go through and they go line by line. When we pull a case or we work an investigation, we pull that paperwork, and 9 times out of 10, the paperwork's not even completed. So we're working on a case now, for example, involving excessive overtime, and there's a requirement for the folks to fill out a piece of paper that says when they come in, what they did, and when they went home, and then supervisor signs off on it. Well, we pulled thousands of records, and the vast majority of them are blank. So the processes exist, the mechanisms exist, I just don't think they're effectively enforced. And enforced is probably a strong word. But the oversight and grants compliance piece would involve, you know, I don't want to say a substantial amount of work, but it is a full-time job to monitor grants and contracts and to make sure that the city is getting what they paid for. And we find, like I said, the vast majority of our investigations, that is not the case.
Thank you.
And just to chime in, I would be in full support of him adding that additional person to provide oversight for grants. We've just recently deployed kind of a rapid response team, a lean team, to do a deep dive into grants. You know, we went from $6 million to $9 million in the public service grants and didn't add additional people to oversee that. In addition to, they've lost a couple of people to the KHA. You contrast the grants department with KHA. KHA has about 45 people, and the grants department is at 7. So we're doing a deep dive into that. We'll be making some recommendations on how to improve that function.
And if I may, we'd like to be part of that process.
So we can help,
we'd love to do that. And that's a kind of a shout out to the city council as well. When you think it's appropriate for us to get involved in the drafting legislation or in these processes, it'd be helpful on the front end if we can kind of do lessons learned or some of the pitfalls that we've seen in other jurisdictions where, you know, we can insert ourselves into the preventative side of things.
You are there. Is there any other business? If not, it's time for public comment. I do believe we have some citizens here today. If any of you would like to speak,
Ms. Marie,
you
sit down a second, please.
3 minutes. All right. Mr. Carnell Oliver, I have a card for you.
Yes, my name is Carnell. Yes, my name is Carnell. I'm the CEO of Jacksonville Social Justice Department. I want to say this. As Ron and Karen, Ron, I don't always agree with you. I've always been hard with you. But right now, there is a bill that has not been signed dealing with the governor and this ethics bill. I would like for the executive side and also the legislative side of our council to stand together, encourage our governor not to sign that ethics bill. Because it's detrimental. I'm talking to you honestly and publicly. It's that I don't like nobody of wrongful public trust. Everybody that I know that is good-hearted people have a problem with the body of our government that's working on the state, local, and federal level. I don't trust that system. That's why I give y'all so much pushback on the council. Will I apologize for any of my actions? No. Because the simple fact is that I'm seeing everything that y'all don't see on the streets. And the biggest concern is how are our elected officials representing us. And right now, my biggest heartburn right now is with this Florida State Legislature. And if anybody can make the biggest difference, it's the executive side and the legislative body getting in front of a camera saying that we want the government to veto the ethics bill. That's the first portion of my conversation. The second portion is that I believe that there needs to be penalties for people who do not comply with these contracts. It needs to be severe, painful contracts. Not contracts, but accountability, self-reporting. I've had a conversation with Mr. LaSalle about this before, because I don't like a lot of nonprofits. I have my reasons. We invest in them so that they can produce some return on investment. But for me as a person, I know what happened with a lot of those COVID-19 dollars. A lot of people have told me certain things, but they won't give me documents to back it up. So what I need from the ethics office and what I need from the inspector general is to be given more teeth to hold certain people accountable. When I say hold them accountable, bury them so far in the
30 seconds, ground, Mr. Oliver.
Bury them so much, so far underneath this institution, they won't never see a day of light ever again. And that's why I'm talking about accountability. I want to bury people where they can't come out of that ground ever again.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver, for your comment. Mr. Newman. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello. I am John Philanthropic Resiliency Newman. Name and address is also on file with the FBI, the Attorney General, State Attorney of the 4th Judicial Circuit. And I was banned on the St. John's Riverkeeper Facebook page. And I've been unbanned now, so that's probably the biggest thing. But what I want to share with you, you know, and I want this to be made part of the permanent record, but this is, you know, the Northeast Florida Regional Center for Resiliency. It's dated April 6, 23. And I just put on here, you know, for the Inspector General Selection Committee, but this is before the elections. So it was a year ago. And the reason I'm bringing it up is our place, you know, is Category 1 wetlands next to a FEMA camp. So in full disclosure, you know, I was, you know, our place could be a park. You know, public access on our water, it's the worst I've ever seen. You want to tell, don't come to Jack. We're just going to crush you. And so, you know, I want this to be part of the permanent record. And I'll tell you why. You know, I participated in it. This is Resilient Jacksonville. It's almost 300 pages. And, you know, you open it up, and there's the mayor. Here's Ann Coglianese. Never had an email back from her. Our executive summary. You know, the table of contents. And then you open this up, and here's Jacksonville today. Not tomorrow, not yesterday, today, but fishing downtown. You know what? We're opening up drinking zones. I mean, sign me up. So bring your fishing pole and, you know, put me down to the big city cup. Because, I mean, you know, I'm going to be down there. And, I mean, this is fraud. We're telling the world, you come here, and this is what you're going to be able to do today. And so this is just a microcosm. And let me just say, too, you know, when you talk about grants and things like that, you know, like I said, you know, the it's off the charts. You know, and so, yeah, you know, I'm working with, you know, with this team here. You know, and you look at the 2022-0188, you know, that was the legislation that got you in here. You know, it took over for, what was it, that Lisa King? You know, I'm with. We got some issues here.
30 seconds, Mr. Mimi.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm not the bad guy. I want to be one of the biggest cheerleaders in the world for Jacksonville. And the only way that's going to happen is if you open up the waterways. So we need a sponsor. I've been to 4 JEA board meetings. I went to the JE fraud stuff. I mean, put me on the stand today. I mean, you know, I swear, you know, this is positive. You know, so I need a sponsor, and it should be in the park.
Time's up, Mr. Newman. Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening, and here, let's have this part of the permanent record.
Thank you, Mr. Newman, and thank you again, Mr. Oliver. We always appreciate your involvement in city government. Is there any other business from the panel here? If not, I think this meeting is adjourned at 10:30.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yes, he did his work.
I can't do
well. It's like a lot of times
you can tell us
to be fair, his like facial expressions. I've got it. My brother's job is to make this apart. And some of those assistance program.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
People have sent me information. I didn't know about this until somebody sent me information. So I reached out to Waters about this and see what they're doing. That doesn't seem right that the city can take somebody's property if they utilize taxpayer dollars to help themselves. This is how government is supposed to work.
If you have federal allegations of fraud, waste, and abuse.
Sorry, I have like 4 emails.
I sent a lot of them.
One thing about it is that that's something that I heard, and I'm hearing it from people in the community. I took it up to the board.